Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Patrick Brady, Liberal Salim Muakil, and columnist Phil Kadner of the Southtown Star. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, in a presidential campaign, there are weeks when the subjects to be discussed are very serious, and then there are weeks that different issues pop up. They appear to be somewhat silly. They dominate news for a couple of days, and one asks whether or not really they will have any sway in anybody's votes. Well, there was one such incident that took quite a bit of news coverage this past week, and that deals with Jesse Jackson Sr. We all know that Jesse Jackson likes to talk. We all know that Jesse Jackson likes to be on TV. He's been on TV for a long time, so you would know that he would think that he would know that if he's sitting in a television studio with a microphone, that it's possible that that microphone may pick up some off the record asides, as they did. Last week, in a television interview with Fox News, he basically whispered to a fellow guest that, in referencing Barack Obama, he said that he thought Barack Obama was talking down to black people. He was talking about Obama's recent speech on Father's Day, when he dealt with the responsibility, parental responsibility within the black community. And then he went on to say, "I want to cut his nuts off." Now, again, this is a family show, so we're not going to repeat that over and over again. But that's what he said. And the reaction was quite stark. And one of the most he apologized the next day. Barack Obama accepted the apology. But one of the things that was stated was also a national co-director of the Obama campaign is Reverend Jesse Jackson's son, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. from Illinois. And this is what he said, quote, "I am deeply, deeply outraged and disappointed in Reverend Jackson's reckless statements about Senator Barack Obama." He went on to refer to those comments as ugly rhetoric. And Salim Muakil from In These Times, also a talk show host for WVON, you have followed the Jackson family and his career for a long time. Does this flack have any political significance in any way, or is this just a 3 or 4 day story?
It has political significance. Jesse Jackson was enunciating the feelings of an increasingly a growing number of black activists, in particular, who are a bit disappointed by Senator Obama's focus on these cultural issues. So I think it does have some resonance. It has resonance in another way as well. It proves that Jesse Jackson is more out of the loop than we had expected, unless, of course, he was sacrificing himself to aid Obama, because this has certainly aided Obama in the white electorates.
Now, there's, as you know, in the black community, there's a lot of conspiratorialists. Mm-hmm. Is there much talk out there this may have been a setup?
Yes, there is. Quite a bit, because they, as you pointed out, Jesse Jackson should know that the mics are perpetually hot, and he should, you know, he was the one who got caught with the Hymietown remark way back when, and so he of all people should know that you don't make those kind of indecorous remarks and expect to be unscathed by them.
Phil Kadner also joins us. He's a veteran columnist for the Southtown Star. Thank you very much for joining us. And Phil, your column today referred to this as a "oh, dad" moment. And I think most people would know what that means, but elaborate.
Well, it's one of those moments where as a son, you're sitting there and suddenly your father says something that embarrasses you with your friends, family, in this case, maybe sort of your boss. And you go, "oh, dad." and you don't know quite how to respond. Obviously, Congressman Jackson responded very strongly with these words. It's quite an unusual thing for him to have done that. In the past, I've asked him about why he hasn't made comments repudiating his father when I know they've had differences of opinion, and he's told me he knows that there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans who would rejoice over a battle between the two Jacksons. So he's kind of held his fire. So this was also kind of a key moment in his career to come out and distance himself from his father.
Do you just pick up on what Salim had to say, suggesting that there's maybe a growing belief in the certain sectors of the black community that Obama is walking on hot coals when he talks about these moral issues, which may be very endearing to a lot of white people.
I think that's probably true. I think it's interesting there hasn't been a lot of emphasis on this. When Reverend Jackson made his comments, I believe he used the words faith-based, referring to Obama's reference to faith-based organizations. And that goes back to President Bush's promise during his campaign to send government money to faith-based organizations to fund social programs that had traditionally been funded by the federal government. And that was a message to the conservative movement at that time to say, I'm going to send you guys government money. We're not going to be doing this through the government anymore. We're going to enrich the churches that support our organization. And I wonder if that didn't play a role in what Reverend Jackson was saying, his thinking anyway, about what he was saying. I haven't seen much made of that, but I could see where pastors in the black community would take a great deal of offense at that, because they
especially,
really
especially
weren't
included. Especially since he's been the recipient of federal funds himself.
I want to get a Republican perspective on this. Patrick Brady joins us. He is the new Illinois National Republican Committeeman. He takes office right after the Republican convention. He's a former federal prosecutor. He's a partner over at Deloitte Touche. And welcome to your first appearance on our program.
Thanks,
Bruce. Nice to have you with us. There was also a little flap in the McCain campaign this week about some things that Phil Graham had to say. So how much should a voter be concerned about the utterances of a surrogate when they're out there? I mean, does it move any votes? Will this flap with Obama, will it really move any votes?
No. And I think this week, Senator McCain had probably one of the best weeks he's had since his campaign started. We had some great poll numbers this week. It's dead heat on the national polls. A lot of the state polls, key states are moving McCain's way. Had a great fundraising month. The Republican National Committee has raised a lot of money. The national lead that Senator Obama had after the bounce he got from the nomination's gone, the money gap's gone. He had a real great series of town hall meetings, finishing up with a women's event in Wisconsin Friday night, which was tremendous. He was very well received. So all in all, Senator McCain had a tremendous week. And, you know, the surrogate talk, I mean, surrogates are what they are, and they do say certain things. I know particularly some of the associates of the Obama campaign in the last couple months, particularly in the primary, have had some issues, but I'm not sure how much they move votes, particularly this time.
We have to pause for a moment, and I know that you want to comment on some statements that were stated on this program recently, and we will do that. 1-800-723-8289 from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit GoRedForWomen.org.
Go Red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Sioux Falls, South Dakota to Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. And wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border or on XM Satellite Radio, thanks very much for joining us tonight. Look forward to your telephone calls. And Pat Brady, we were talking about things that surrogates said. And a couple of weeks ago, Jan Schakowsky, who is a congresswoman from Illinois, who is one of the national co-chairs of Barack Obama's campaign, was on this program, and you took exception to some things that she had to say.
Yeah, she stated that Senator McCain, and I'm paraphrasing, would like to see the United States attacked or some kind of attack that would enhance the stature with the voters given his military experience. It's just silliness. And this, a couple things, it doesn't help Senator Obama either. I mean, that kind of discourse, and I think it's been proven from what we saw in the Wesley Clark comments, that hurts Obama. They lose on that issue. So I don't think it's particularly productive. But I guess the thing that's, as a McCain supporter and a true believer in John McCain, I wish that Senator Obama would come out and repudiate these comments. We haven't heard anything, at least I haven't, or the campaign hasn't, because I don't think that he necessarily agrees with this, but he doesn't seem to want to do anything about it or rein these people in or scold them when they do make these ridiculous comments.
We have a unique situation this evening. Everybody at this table knows one, and in some cases, maybe a couple of the candidates. And I want to get a sense, and I'm going to ask all of them to sort of, they can raise their hand and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But I want them to share with the audience their personal observations of the character and the relationship that they have with the candidates. And I'm going to start with you, Pat, because we talked a lot about Obama in the first 15 minutes. But again, you met John McCain when you had just left the University of Arizona. You're from Chicago. You went to Arizona. Your law degree is from Southern Illinois University, and you're a former federal prosecutor. But again, tell us how you met John McCain, because you've been a supporter of John McCain's long before it was fashionable.
Sure. Being a good Chicagoan and an Irishman, I was celebrating St. Patrick's Day in 1984, and John McCain jumped on the car, and we gave him a ride in the back of the car in the parade, and they've been following him since. And in 99, when he ran, Jim Durkin called me up one day and said, hey, there's a guy.
He was the state chair of the campaign and a state representative in Illinois.
Absolutely, and said, there's a guy coming to town that's running for president, and you want to come along with us, and it was John McCain. So I've been involved with the McCain campaign since 99, and he asked for observations. He is a fundamentally decent human being. He has strong beliefs, and what he does is service to the country, not service to self, and he's exhibited that his entire life. I think his spine is made of steel. This time last year, he was traveling coach, sitting in the middle seat, carrying his bags, and now he's the nominee of the Republican Party in a very close race. So my personal observations of the guy are that, or Senator McCain are that. But the last thing that I have observed, he is one of the funniest guys I've ever had the opportunity to sit in a room with and talk. He's just a very engaging, charismatic person who's got a great story.
Salim Mowakil, how long have you known Barack Obama?
I met him in 91.
Casual friend, professional friend, where would you put your relationship?
Well, I was introduced to him by Judson Minor, who's an attorney, used to be in Harold Washington's administration.
And used to be his boss, right?
Right, indeed. And he said, here's a guy you need to talk to. We had similar interests, progressive politics and whatnot, and I was absolutely impressed by him. He seemed to be very dedicated, selfless, and very scholarly. You know, he knew a lot about many issues, the black experience, general international issues in ways that other people didn't know. He had understanding of kind of ideological nuances that most people really are not that concerned with.
Was this before he ran for anything?
This was before he ran for anything. And I also followed his initial entry into politics with that when Alice Palmer recommended him as her replacement.
And then, she was a state senator.
A state senator on the South Side.
Now she recommended him as a.
Yes, she did it.
But there was a falling out there.
It was a falling out later because she ran. She ran for the for Congress for Jesse Jackson's seat. Jesse won the primary. She wanted to come back in as senator. He refused to let her back after he entered the race. And then he challenged her signatures on a petition and won the challenge. And so there's been bad blood between those two for a while. But And he was a very progressive and I think very effective state legislator. And so I have fond memories of Senator Obama.
Phil Kadner, you've covered him for many, many years. What sort of relationship do you have? And again, I've not asked you this question, you know, before the air. I mean, good, bad, indifferent. What's your assessment of him as a political commodity and as an individual based on your own personal experiences?
Well, I can't say that I've covered him very extensively or on a continuing basis. I covered a congressional campaign he ran against Bobby Rush some years back. I have covered the legislature off and on, although I'm not based in Springfield, but I've been involved with issues down there. I never knew of him as being a leader on any of the really key issues that face Illinois. He was kind of known as part of a group of legislators who were connected to Senate President Emil Jones, who comes out of the Chicago Democratic machine. He was known as a very bright guy, very intelligent guy. But on issues like education funding, which was something I've focused on for years in my writing, I don't remember him being a real leader on that issue. I don't remember anything really being accomplished on that issue when he was in the legislature. Hasn't been now. So it's kind of surprising and a little puzzling, I think, for some of those of us. If we had been asked which of these state senators might someday become a U.S. president, I'm not sure how many hands would have gone in the air. I'm sure one or two might have, because I had heard his name mentioned early on in the context of running for a congressional or Senate seat. But he also
did not run a terribly impressive campaign for Congress. I mean, he lost to Bobby Rush.
Right. And it wasn't a very impressive campaign. I think Rush connected better with the people. Which now, in context, when you see Obama in front of crowds now and how he connects, it's kind of astonishing.
Rush had a more nationalist appeal. Rush was appealing to racial issues in a much more overt way. Obama was attempting to embrace other communities and to blunt the racial appeal. And at this time, for Rush and for the first congressional district, this was considered something that was out of step because it was a strongly black district, historically black district.
So is that what's going on now? Is that part of
what's
the
going
angst?
On.
Is they just they don't think that he is strong
black enough?
The whole
black enough question is embedded in some of this dispute that we are currently going through.
In your view, Pat, and again, we should also mention to those listening around the country, the Illinois Republican Party has been in a lot of deep problems for quite a number of years now. And it's a unique man that steps forward and says, I want to be the Illinois National Republican Committeeman to represent the state, especially when it is the home state of the Democratic nominee. So, I mean, you get double stars. I don't know what it means, or you've got to be...
Nowhere to go but up.
It's a good way to look at it.
But the challenge of taking on and representing the Republican Party in this home state of Barack Obama, I mean, how much of an uphill fight is this going to be?
Oh, of course it's a big challenge. But last poll, we're within 10. We have going to have 102 county coordinators. We're going to have a full campaign here. But it will be tough. But in the course of working for Senator McCain and his reform agenda, we're going to be doing a lot of outreach. So I think we're going to set ourselves up nicely for 2010.
And you're on the finance committee.
Yeah, I'm on the national.
Is there a lot of McCain money coming out of Illinois?
Oh, sure. We raised $2.5 million 2 weeks ago here in Chicago. And equally important, I think, we did an outreach event with 250 leaders in the Hispanic community, which was tremendously successful. And just last week, I met with 15 individuals that represent Democrats for McCain that are disenfranchised Hillary Clinton supporters. So I think we're going to surprise you here in Illinois.
How significant is the outreach to the Hispanic community, and how important is it, in your view, to having John McCain elected president?
Well, I'll give you his view, which he stated many times. It's critical, and he told that to the Hispanic leadership here in Chicago, and I think Senator Brown would probably agree the Hispanic vote in this cycle is critical to both candidates, and they're both doing a lot of outreach to the Hispanic community, and it's important. And, in the long run, that's good for the country because it's time for the Hispanic community to be.
Is that key in your view, Phil? Is that, I mean, the battle for that, is that going to be one of the constituencies that you and a lot of reporters are going to be looking at?
Absolutely. I mean, you look. I think every constituency is going to be critical here because I think we're looking at a campaign that probably, like previous campaigns, is going to hinge on two or three states. And those two or three states will determine who the next president's going to be. So they're focusing on and targeting which states could be the key states, the groups within those states. Women will be a big key because a lot of them were disaffected during the Hillary Clinton-Obama campaign. And I got to believe both the McCain and Obama camps are going to be doing all they can to get the women's vote out. So I think all those groups are going to be significant. And Obama, of course, is going to have to get every last vote he can possibly get out of the black community to help to support him.
This unrest that's in the black community about some of the comments that Obama is making, what's the breakdown in gender there? Because he's talking about basically, he's talking about the breakdown of the family. Mm-hmm. He is saying, you know, turn off the television set, turn off SportsCenter. So he's saying that to families, many of those families are headed by women. So what's the gender divide that you described?
I don't think there's a significant gender divide in that particular issue. But I think that Senator Obama is indeed attempting to appeal to women because he realizes that McCain's maverick reputation is giving him the kind of buoyancy that he wouldn't normally have in this time of the Republicans' brand being so discredited.
I want to talk about reform when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. We'll back with some telephone calls from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Seattle, Washington to Worcester, Mass., you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our voices from Beyond the Beltway, our progressive this evening, is Salim Muwakkil. He's the senior editor of In These Times, also writes for the op-ed for the Chicago Tribune, a native of the village of Harlem, and also he is currently a crime and communities media fellow of the Open Society Institute, and you're working on a special project involving inmates. Tell us about that.
The growing prison population, immense. I mean, we have the largest prison population on the planet.
Is it over 2 million?
Over 2 million. About half of those are African Americans, and they have to come out. And many of these are kind of the most vital and energetic members of the black community, and they were incarcerated because of economic reasons and all kinds of reasons that frame their life chances. And when they come out of institutions, they are ill-equipped, really, to contribute, to be rehabilitated. And there are very few institutions that are out here, except institutions that are run by other inmates or people who share their sensibilities. Those are really the only kinds of people that they listen to. And so my contention is that a lot of the leadership of the black community in the future will be gang related, or will be related to some sort of prison experience, and what will that do to the leadership cadre of
and you're
black
working
America.
On a documentary on this subject as well?
Gangs in Chicago.
Oh, okay, right. When's that going to be due?
We're waiting for additional funding from the Discovery Network.
Okay, well. We'll have you back some night, and we'll just talk about that, because I think it's one of the it's one of the elements of society that doesn't work. You know, the prison system just does not work, and with all the recidivist rates, it's not well done in this country.
And where do those people go?
Patrick Brady also joins us. He's making his first appearance. He is the Illinois National Republican Committeeman Designate. He will take over when the convention ends in Minneapolis right after Labor Day. He is a former U.S. attorney, a former assistant state's attorney. He works on white-collar crime. He roots out corruption. He now works for Deloitte Touche. He's a partner over there, and he deals with multinational corporations, and he is an expert on corruption. Wherever it exists, he'll track it down. And again, a graduate of University of Arizona and also Southern Illinois Law School. And also joining us this evening is Phil Kattner. He is the veteran columnist for the Southtown Star. That's one of the newspapers surrounding the Chicagoland area. And every day since 1985, listen to this for a task, 5 days a week since 1985, over 23 years of writing a column. You think you have an opinion? There's no opinion he has not expressed. Is that right, Phil?
I'd say that's pretty true.
A lot of thinking.
And again, we thank you very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. I want to talk about the issue of reform, because it seems to me we have the issue of reform, and we have the issue of experience. In the Democratic primary, it was about change versus experience, and change won, and reform won. And yet you have as really the moniker of the Republican candidate, if there's a word that describes his public career, it is reform. And he now also is maybe saddled with the word experience, and some might view that as being saddled with that, at a time when Barack Obama is trying to express that he has some experience. So let's talk about, based on what we know and about these candidates, I mean, who is the legitimate bearer of the mantle of reformer, in your view? I know you think it's John McCain, but why?
I think even if you look objectively, that experience has allowed Senator McCain to have successful reform. I mean, he's been a reformer pretty much everything he's done in the Congress since he got there in 82. So the true reformer, if you want to say the one that's been successful at reform, is John McCain. I know that Senator Obama preaches reform, but I think what we've seen here in the last couple months is this, the rhetoric isn't quite matching the reality. And I think that that's something that he's going to have to overcome against Senator McCain.
Now, what about the challenges again that he's flip flopping and he's shifting positions? That charge has been made by both sides. It generally is made by both sides in all campaigns, certainly in the last few years that I can remember. So there's nothing new about that charge. But again, on some of the key issues, he does appear to have changed positions.
Certainly. I think we're up to 9 or 10 now, and I don't know if this trip to Iraq is a pretext for a flip on his Iraq policy. I think it hurts Senator Obama more than it might hurt Senator McCain, is because Senator Obama ran in the primary as a change candidate and a different kind of politician. And now that he's running to the center like a typical politician, and some of these stories that have, like in the New Yorker today or other stories that have been in the Sun-Times here, in the Chicago Sun-Times, we're seeing that Senator Obama is a typical politician. I think that really hurts him in the long run as far as the flip-flop issue.
The hometown people tend to know the candidates the best. Again, your assessment, does the reform mantle fit Barack Obama, Phil Kadner?
I don't see anything in his history from Illinois that indicates that he would drastically reform the way government is done in Illinois, but that's a task that may be beyond any human's ability. But the fact that he exists, no matter what else he says or does, the existence of him as a candidate for president of the United States has changed the country already and will change the country in the future. Just like John F. Kennedy may have been known as a reformer, but in fact he embodied a lot of traditional political traditions, including corruption.
He also ran on a capital gains tax cut.
But the thing to remember about the Kennedys was, you know, people forget that in 1959, having a Catholic run for president was a big deal. Who now would think twice about that being a big deal? If the same thing happens from the Obama campaign, no matter what else happens from here on out, that's a dramatic change in the way this country thinks. And so there are two kinds of change here. Certainly in terms of affecting actual change in the way government is traditionally done, McCain has a track record that I think is undeniable.
What about for the African Americans that you speak with on a regular basis, that you interact with, Salim? What does change mean to them? I mean, is there an expectation that their life is going to dramatically change if Barack Obama gets elected?
No. One of the things that many of my associates are careful to caution the black electorate about is not to expect Senator Barack Obama to be any kind of a savior. He's a politician. He has political constraints. He has precedents he has to abide by. And don't expect too much of a change. But people are expecting some attempt to provide context for the behaviors that he regularly denounces. And also, I think in the foreign policy field, people are expecting him to be a lot more embracing of the third world, a lot less combative in his attitude toward darker nations, and so I think there is some expectation that kind of reform should come from him.
And the candidates that tend to shift towards the middle, which all candidates do, for the last 50 years, that's what candidates do. Once they win primaries, I mean, what are the net roots? Are they giving him any slack now?
A little slack, but increasingly less slack. I think.
What does your gut tell you when he goes to Iraq and he sits down with General Petraeus and those leaders? What's he going to come back with? What does your gut tell you he's going to come back with?
I certainly hope he doesn't come back with a warmed over Bush or McCain program. But I think, as Pat Brady pointed out, he has a lot more to lose if he appears to be less committed to reform than does McCain, because much of his entire campaign is based on this notion that he is a reformer, he is a charismatic reformer who will bring change to the American system.
Are both candidates trying to erase the political parties and the labels this year? I mean, is McCain trying to be, you know, left, and is no. Obama trying to be right? And, you know, obviously they believe that the campaign is won between the 40-yard lines and where maybe the firebrands on either side, you know, they've already been used. They've already been discarded.
No, not in Senator McCain's case. I've seen a lot of his speeches and events, and he has the same statements now that he did in the primary. So I think he's pretty much stayed where he always is, which is a conservative, and he says that in his speeches. So I don't think he is. I think that they are trying to reach out, both of them, to the middle.
Well, he's a conservative if he's measured against Barack Obama, but he's not a conservative if you line him up with every Republican in the country. He would be more towards the center, would he not?
I think his rating is 83, 84, not too far from Newt Gingrich. So I think he's had a pretty conservative voting record historically. I know some conservatives don't agree with everything he's done, but I think historically he's been pretty conservative, and I don't see much change in the rhetoric.
What's the biggest problem he has right now as a candidate?
The biggest problem I think that he has is a candidate is something that he doesn't have a lot of control over. I think that Senator Obama, and God bless him for it, gets a lot of great media coverage that Senator McCain just doesn't seem to get. And I do think that
I think McCain gets pretty good media coverage. Both of them,
they are
in
both
many ways,
media darlings.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I mean, media loves both of these guys. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons they both won. And, you know, if you're going to become president of the United States, at some point, you're going to be the media darling, because if you're not, it's really hard to win that big election.
And I always argue that the reason that if you really look historically at the charges of media bias, you know, and a lot of course, conservatives have thought that the media, you know, all, you know, shifts to the left. I think when it comes right down to it, the media first and foremost loves a good story. Now, I think they tend to be more liberal than conservative. But bottom line, they like a great story. And in John McCain and in Barack Obama, you have two competing great stories. And we're going to talk more about it when we continue. Phone lines open, 1-800-723-8029, from coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse. I'm Bruce Dumont.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Phoenix, Arizona to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Let's go to Salinas, California, where Rich is listening to us on KION. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had three questions, one for each of you. And, Bruce, the first one is for you, and that's from last week when you had the representative, Jan, was it Shanskowski is her name?
That was two weeks ago, yes.
Okay. She was not aware of Christopher Dodd's amendment that was being put in the mortgage bill regarding spying on our electronic transmissions.
Yes.
From eBay and PayPal and our credit cards.
Yes.
And I was wondering if anything happened on that, if she found out about that.
I don't know about that, but I know that she did. She took notes on those specifics, so I'm sure she's looking into them. And you can call her office and ask them.
All right. And then for both the other gentlemen, for the Obama representative, I'd like the definition or your definition of progressive and how that compares with the Democratic or Liberal Party as it stands today versus socialism or even communism. And for the Republican,
Let him respond to that first,
okay.
Salim.
Well, I think progressive is essentially that you believe that the government has a role to mediate where the free market fails, to build bridges, to patch up the social safety net, and those kinds of things, that the government has a responsibility in that realm.
And that's by the way, that was one of the things that Jesse Jackson was upset about, was Obama had not addressed
exactly
the government's role in that.
As a politician and as a future policymaker, he should be concerned with the policy implications of this behavior in the black community rather than the cultural implications.
Okay, so basically more government, vote for Obama is what you're looking at.
Not exactly. It's not that stark of a choice. I mean, Senator McCain also favors some governmental intervention here and there.
Did I hear you correctly? Is it not proper to have a general discussion about the role, personal responsibility within any community where there's children being born out of wedlock? Where there's violence. I mean, is that not everyone's responsibility
absolutely,
to question that?
Absolutely.
And it isn't just about government programs.
No, exactly. I mean, and that discussion is going on incessantly within the black community. There's no absence of that discussion. The question
but
is...
Can white people be involved in that discussion?
Well, yes, they can, but...
Can a black leader... I mean,
but often...
When Obama has that discussion, I mean, I have defended Jesse Jackson on this program as recently as a couple of weeks ago, because Jesse Jackson has been talking about those issues
absolutely
for 20
right.
years,
for 20
as
years.
Has Minister Farrakhan
precisely.
For 20-plus years.
But they contextualize
but
that's what people are concerned about, Senator Obama's lack of contextual information.
In what way?
In the sense that when a lot of white people and a lot of black people, they look at the situation we mentioned earlier, the prison population, there are close to, black men who are about 6% of the total population represent such a vast number in the prisons. And people will look at that and they will think that there's some inherent criminality in the genetic makeup of African Americans unless they know the historical context that predisposes or frames attracts the behavior of a lot of young black people into these criminal enterprises, and how many people are afflicted by those behavioral deficiencies if they had the same kind of structural deficits.
You had a question for a Republican?
Yeah, the one for the Republican is the Republican Party as it stands today. What is the difference between that and the liberals, or say Ronald Reagan as a conservative Republican, and when he was in office?
Well, I don't think that the principles of the parties have changed. We still believe in a limited role of government, lower taxes, strong national defense, and moral clarity on the social issues. I don't think we've changed on many of those issues. Now, where we've had problems in the last 7 or 8 years is in expenditures and keeping government spending under control, and we have not done a good job of that. And that's why I believe in 2006 we had such problems. And I think one of the strengths of Senator McCain has is he's one that will come in and control government spending and reform government.
And but what about border control and global warming, this new theory we have that we're causing the global warming situation, that doesn't seem like it's conservative.
Securing the borders is a very conservative position. If you really listen to what Senator McCain says, that's what he says. First and foremost, we need to secure the borders.
Isn't that a new position, though?
That's a new emphasis
of
McCain.
Isn't that a new emphasis, though?
Well, after the failure of the bill probably a year ago now, he did put new emphasis on securing the borders.
Do you think that if John McCain became elected president, I mean, that there would be an aggressive enforcement of those who are serial hirers and employers of illegal immigrants?
I think that's part of the total immigration package that he's advocated for.
But do you think that would really happen?
I do believe that would happen. And I think that's part of what he is proposing. He's secure the borders first, but then we have to have a realistic immigration plan to handle the 16 or 18 million people that are here. First and foremost, we get rid of the criminals. And I think part of that is we need to talk to the business people that are hiring these illegals and take care of that. Because
do you think there will ever be do you believe that, Phil? Do you believe that whoever is elected, there'd be an aggressive enforcement of those that hire illegal immigrants?
It's been such an obvious problem, such an obvious solution to the problem for so long that you have to say no. I mean, part of this economy, and a pretty substantial part of this economy, is built on the work those illegal immigrants do, the profits made by the corporations or companies, businesses, industries that hire them. And I think it's deliberately ignored because everybody acknowledges that there is a certain free market component to all this at work. And it's a little bit entertaining to especially see the Republicans screaming about it when everybody knows that business is part of the problem.
Yes, absolutely. Free market at work. And I think that...
So don't expect anything.
Well, maybe some minor manipulations on the fringes, but that's about it.
Okay. Listen, on that note, thank you very much for joining us in hour number one. If you're listening to us on television, we are going to see you next week. If you're watching us or listening to us on radio, we're going to be keeping our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. In hour number one, we have been joined by Salim Muwakkil. He is a columnist for In These Times. Phil Kadner is with the Southtown Star. And also joining us this evening is Patrick Brady. He is the new Illinois National Republican Committeeman, strong supporter, member of the National Finance Committee of John McCain. If you want to send John McCain some money, I'm sure he'll give you a website that you can do that in hour number two. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Stay right where you are. If you're listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, tonight featuring commentary by Republican Patrick Brady, liberal columnist Salim Muakil, and columnist Phil Kattner of the Southtown Star. Phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. We've been talking about Barack Obama and John McCain and the campaign for President of the United States, and we've been hogging the microphone for far too long, so let's bring in the callers at 1-800-723-8289. Reaching out to Youngstown, Ohio, where Alan is listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead, Alan. You're on the air.
Yes, good evening, Bruce. You know, months ago we had a discussion that this would be an excellent time for a third-party candidate. And as these candidates that we have of the two major parties reveal their inner selves, I see this more and more true. There's only two big ifs that have to be done in order to enable this. One, the media has to stop saying that this third party, this libertarian, has no chance of winning. Because I'll tell you what, as long as we believe that, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, if we can possibly get around that, the other factor, of course, is money. And as long as the first one is in play, the second one can't happen. Nobody's going to donate money to somebody with no chance of winning.
Wait a minute. What about Ron Paul?
Well,
Are you arguing that the media ignored Ron Paul? Because I think Ron Paul raised about $20 million.
I'm not saying they ignored him. I'm saying they repeatedly stated this man has no chance of winning. And despite that, he garnered a somewhat of a percentage of the vote. He did gain money, and the same thing can happen to our libertarian candidate. Ron Paul has stated that he will not run as an independent, although perhaps maybe as a vice president to Bob Barr. That would be acceptable.
But explain to me and explain to everybody listening why you think, by the way, we should mention that the Green Party, which had their convention in Chicago, they have selected former Georgia Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney to be their candidate, which I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago in this program, we were talking about whether Bob Barr would siphon off Republican votes in Georgia that could tip Georgia to the Democrats. I think that Cynthia McKinney on the ticket has just given the Georgia-backed Republicans, because I think she'll split the vote down there with Bob Barr. Explain to me. Give me the math. We're all open-minded here. Give me the math that a Libertarian or a Green Party candidate or Ralph Nader can get the 270 electoral votes they need to be president. We're going to be quiet. You tell us how to do it.
Well, I'm going to eliminate all but Bob Barr because I believe the other two are still ultra left-wing. They have zero chance in a thinking world. Now, here's the thing. We have two senators that are coming from a poll that has a 9% approval rating. Now, neither one of these candidates, we have the invisible man, Barack Obama, who chooses to gallantly vote present so he doesn't show us what his true feelings are, what he really thinks, because he knows they'd be unacceptable. All this nonsense with his greenness about eliminating oil, jacking up carbon taxes, all that's going to do is wreck what little remains of the economy, which, in case somebody's noticed, that we're busy using bailing wire
Alan?
Gum.
Yep. Alan, when he gives a speech, 20,000 people show up.
Yes.
He's raised more money than any candidate in the history of the country. John McCain is catching up.
What choice we keep
Why people vote with their check before they go to the polls, they vote with their checkbook. I'm going to let everybody else. Phil, what do you think? Is there a viable way for a third voice to emerge in the American political system?
At some point I think there may be, given the economy, and it's if it continued to collapse, we might reach that point sooner than some of us might expect. But short of that, I don't think so. I think people are comfortable to a certain degree with the two major political parties, and part of that is that they are so similar now that it makes them comfortable. And I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Could Michael Bloomberg do it? Is it really about money and the ability to buy access, just as Russ Perot?
Well, Russ Perot is a great example. No, it's more than that. You have to connect with people. The money is just a first component to get your message out there, but you have to connect with people as well and go through that test. Maybe Bloomberg could do it. Right now, my gut reaction is I think these two candidates out there are both pretty good candidates in McCain and Obama.
May I interject that I believe they're both horrible. We right-wingers have nobody to vote for. This McCain has embraced everything that we despise. He is going to make all the illegals legal. He's stated that, although now he's thrown us the bone that he's going to reinforce the borders. He's grasped onto this global warming by mankind nonsense, and even if it's true, as I've previously stated, it will destroy what little is left of our economy when what remains is shifted to India and China, which are not going to be bound by any sort of solutions to the CO2. We are in desperate trouble, and if people would understand that what made this country great was adherence to the Constitution and going back to it as the solution, not going forward with this progressive nonsense, this communist ideology, or going to more war. McCain revealed his soul when he brought out that old song, Barbara Ann, and saying this bomb Iran. That shows us what's in the man's mind. He is a hawk. He wants to attack. He wants his own war. He's not satisfied with what's going on. We have not got a choice right now.
Alan, take a breath. Let's let Pat Brady respond. He's the McCain guy. Let him respond to what you've said about McCain.
Well, the one thing that Senator McCain has put his life on the line for is the ability for you to speak your mind, and we appreciate you doing that. But I respectfully disagree. I think Senator McCain's been a consistent conservative on fiscal, on national security, on social issues. And I do think the conservatives have a place to go, and I think it's with John McCain. And I think he's going to be a very effective reform-minded president for the conservatives.
We're
going
to move on. Let's go to Bob in Boise, Idaho, listening to us on KBOI. Nice to hear from Boise tonight.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Good. Two things. The first one is, has anybody kept a tab of Barack's promise? Spending promises. I heard a speech the other day from Ohio where if you add up the numbers just from that one speech, it was $310 trillion between the things he did. And then as far as the energy situation, if you look at environmentalists should be for drilling in America. If you look at the statistics from Marine Mineral Service, I got it off of drillforamericanoil.com. Most of the pollution comes from transporting the oil. If you drilled here, you'd have less pollution. And just wanted to get your comments.
All right, let's let Pat Brady respond to that.
On the
McCain's position on drilling, he's against a drilling in Anwar. He's now supporting offshore drilling, which he opposed a few years ago.
Sure, I think what Senator McCain is doing and taking that position is he recognizes that the Americans need immediate relief for the gas crisis we have right now, and the most immediate relief is to allow this offshore drilling. He announced a very comprehensive program, the Lexington Project, and that's just one facet of it. But I think Senator McCain, more so than Senator Obama, has really recognized this as a big issue.
I want to find out from Phil when we come back about whether this is another one of those issues that anyone, regardless of who gets elected, is really going to do anything significant about it. 1-800-723-8289. Lots of callers from coast to coast and border to border. We will hear from them and more from Phil Kadner and our guests when we roll on from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Two calls in just a moment, but I want to ask Phil the question I asked before the break, and that is, you know, every 4 years we hear, you know, we're going to wean America away from energy, you know, dependence, and we hear it from both sides every 4 years for about the last three or four cycles. Is this one of these issues that there's not going to be any significant change regardless of who is elected?
I think there will be significant change long term no matter who's elected, because I just think the economy just can't take the battering it's going to take from increasing oil prices, and the oil prices are going to continue to increase. We all know
that. Is it going to come from the political sector, or is it going to come from, you know, guys like T. Boone Pickens, who's spending millions of dollars to tell his story, you know, on the air right now, and I think he, from an issue, it seems to me that he wants to make this an issue in this campaign and force it onto the docket.
I think it's going to come from the ground up on this one. For everybody at the grassroots level, whether they're a consumer, whether they're a small businessman, they're all being impacted by this. The major corporations, obviously the travel industry is being impacted. The car companies are being impacted. So you're going to have some sort of solution long term. Short term, I think what you're going to see is just people trying their best in their own little ways to curtail their spending on oil, but I don't think there's much they can do. The offshore drilling thing, we all know there's no immediate impact from that. So short term, I'm not sure people have any control, but every time I think the price of gas goes up now, I think it's another move away from our dependence on oil. How far and how quickly we can get on that, I'm not sure.
Is this an issue that is being talked about in the black community?
Not as much as it should be. There are some beginning discussion about this whole idea of transforming the economy to green jobs, you know, looking for a green economy. And that may be a way to employ people who don't have many prospects these days. On the West Coast, there's a growing movement of this notion of looking for a green economy. And so that may catch on among activists and has some resonance in the community. But generally, there's not that much discussion. There's a lot of pain out there. People are hurting because of the oil prices.
We're going to take another call. Let's go to John, listening to us in Joliet on WLS, coast to coast and border to border. You're on the air.
Yeah, not a lot of pain in the black community. Is this guy insane? When you're trying to make $7.50 an hour and all of a sudden your energy price is doubled, there's no pain there. Not a resonating issue. Especially coming off of nonsense where Reverend Jesse Jackson comes up and is trying to initiate and threaten violence.
When did that happen?
Cutting your nuts off? If I threatened to cut your nuts off, you'd probably be a little upset.
Yeah, that was a metaphor. That was an off-base metaphor.
An off-base metaphor?
He could have used something like slap him upside the head or something.
By you saying that's an off-base metaphor,
be cool, John. Be cool.
Problems we have.
All right, man.
What?
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. Let's go to another John in Crete. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Bruce. Thank you. I want to make a short preface and two quick comments. My preface is I told your screener, Stephanie, that I watched your television show at night to catch my own recording, and I noticed that it was edited, but it was good.
What was edited?
No. I was on your radio show, and then I watched your television show, and I heard my recording of myself. It was good, but it was edited.
No, we have never, sir, in the history of this program, we've never edited anything.
Okay,
we don't have the time to edit. I mean, do you think that if we had the ability to edit this program, there would be as many mistakes as there are?
Okay, yeah, but anyhow, the television show that I saw only had 45 minutes instead of...
No, it only has 45 minutes. That's all kinds of... That's because of the difference between the radio show and the television show. And when you watch the television show, sometimes they don't put all the commercials in. But there's nothing. When you're watching the television show, you are seeing the radio show that is the first hour of the radio show. If you were on the second hour of the radio show and you turn on the TV show and you're not there, it's not because you're not being edited out. We just didn't record you. You got that? There's going to be a test on this next week. 1-800-723-8289. Let's head to Muncie, Indiana. David, listening to us on WoWo. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was just curious because I believe that McCain is going to be speaking to some Latino activists tomorrow who are very concerned about immigration. I was wondering, he seemed to take action that was politically courageous on comprehensive reform and kind of stuck his neck out and kind of paid a price for it with the base. I'm wondering if he doesn't yield any dividends from that in terms of more support from the Latino community, is there an argument to make that might send a message to Republicans that it's okay to use this as a wedge issue because those votes aren't there for them to get anyway? And if that is a valid analysis, is it too... sort of abstract to move people to vote?
I think that because of the positions he's taken that he took a lot of heat for, I think he will have and has garnered a lot of support in the Hispanic community. I'm not sure what you mean by using it as a wedge issue. I think that...
some people have argued that Republicans other than McCain have demagogued the issue, and that's one of the reasons there's such a big backlash against the Republicans amongst the Latinos.
Well, I think part of it is there was really only one candidate, Tom Tancredo, who was one of the last in and one of the first out, who really has made that his issue. And he did not do very well in any primary. He didn't do well in any debate. He didn't move the issue forward. And I have said, and you know, if you're listening to this program, this has been a pet issue of mine since 1996, from the first time I ever went to the borders. But I will tell you, this is a very popular talk show issue. This is not an issue that plays well in the precincts, because it doesn't. Because there are too many people, Republicans, Democrats, liberals, or conservatives. They abhor having illegal immigrants here, and yet they will go to restaurants where they're being served by illegal immigrants. They will hire a landscape service where they're being serviced by illegal immigrants. They will walk in buildings that are being serviced by illegal immigrant construction workers. And frankly, when it comes right down to it, they tisk-tisk, but the reality is they enjoy the benefits of the illegal immigrants that are here.
You don't think that there are people who see that as a wedge issue to try and use the same way that some people used like gay marriage in previous election cycles?
I think everybody, this is Phil Kadner, and I think everybody sees issues in terms of wedge issues if they can be used. I think the fact is that it hasn't been very useful except in some very narrow circumstances. I think people do see through that issue. I think thoughtful people see the complications of actually trying to address the issue and its myriad problems. And the issue, especially when you get to, well, what should you do with children here? Should you give them health care? Should you give them schooling? You know, once you get into those issues, I think the situation becomes much more complex than those who would like to make it a wedge issue are willing to admit, and I think they're easy to knock down.
The only place where that worked once, and it worked only once, and that was when Governor Pete Wilson was running for re-election in California. It's got to be 12 years ago now. He was losing. He picked up on that issue. He made it his wedge issue. He went from 20 points down. He won by double digits. He made it the issue, and as he was making that the wedge issue, a lot of other Republicans, including George Bush, who was running for re-election in Texas, were going in the opposite direction, along with Jack Kemp and Bill Bennett and some other conservatives at the national level, because they understood that what was happening was a perception was growing that Republicans were mean-spirited on the issue. Now, I don't think they are mean-spirited, because I think they're well-intentioned, and I think they believe that if a law is passed, you should enforce the law. But the perception is that there are some Hispanics who may have that feeling, even though the reality is, even with the Proposition 187, the overwhelming percentage of Hispanics in California supported 187. Hispanics do not like people breaking the law any more than anybody else does.
Okay.
Even though that's not the popular perception. Does anybody agree or disagree
with
what I just said?
I think it's true.
Okay. Thanks very much for your
call.
We move on. Let's go to Indianapolis, Indiana. Listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Jessica, thanks very much.
Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help you tonight?
Yes. Basically, I just wanted to make a statement in regards of how the media is currently playing the idea that the Hillary Clinton supporters are all jumping into the Obama bandwagon, and that is not true. And to be able to prove that, you should be able to go to the Just Say No Deal website, and within that website, you are able to see the number of PAC organizations that are building stronger by the day.
So who are you? Who are you voting for?
Well, definitely not for Senator Obama.
But
definitely
who?
Not. I'm
Why,
sorry.
Who then?
Well,
Cynthia
right
McKinney.
Now, probably. It's difficult to decide because we don't have that very many options at this point. But the reason of my call today.
Jessica, I'm going to put you on hold right now. We're going to a commercial break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation with you, 1-800-723-8289. We've got Jessica in Indianapolis. We've got people in Texas. We've got people in Kentucky. We've got people in Illinois. You will hear of them when we roll on from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Indianapolis, Indiana to Mount Vernon, Kentucky, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Salim Muwakkil is here. He is our liberal. He is the senior editor of In These Times. That's one of the most progressive periodicals in the United States. Born in the village of Harlem, a former member of the Black Panther Party, and then you're now conservative.
Not
well,
quite.
At least your hair is gray. At least your hair is gray.
That is true.
Phil Kadner is here. He also a longtime columnist for the Southtown Star. He's been writing a daily column for 5 days a week since 1985, and an observer of politics in Illinois and in the southwestern Cook and suburban areas surrounding Chicagoland. And also joining us this evening is Patrick Brady. He is the new Illinois National Republican Committeeman. He is a partner over at Deloitte Touche and a former U.S. attorney and a former state's attorney as well in the county of Cook. And as we have been talking politics, during the breaks, you've made an interesting thing, and this is for those people living in the Chicago and Illinois area. We've got obviously a lot of listeners on our home station, WLS. There's rumors, because we say in our opening that the program is a program of injections of rumor and innuendo, and we want to state that this falls under the headline rumor and innuendo, but Paul Vallis, who was the former head of the Chicago public school system, who ran for governor as a Democrat, you are now suggesting maybe thinking about switching parties?
Talk about rumors. I want that to be attributed to me, but
I'm not attributing, but I mean...
Oh, that was heard on the street, yeah, but you know, haven't seen anything in the media or any efforts.
You will now.
Well, yeah.
Would that be something that you would welcome? I mean, would the switch of a well-known, he really didn't have too much of a political pedigree when he decided to run as a Democrat, but he ran as a Democrat against Rod Blagojevich two times ago, lost, ran a close race, and has been in Philadelphia and now in New Orleans. But if he came back to Illinois and ran and considered joining the Republican Party, wouldn't that be a big, big story?
We welcome all reformed Democrats to come to the Republican Party. So certainly, certainly Paul Vallis would be welcome as a Republican. But I don't know any more than that, other than what his intentions might be. But he was a very successful person here in Chicago, reforming the Chicago public schools. So he's a known quantity and was very successful. So
let's go back to our friend Jessica, listening to us on POTUS 130 on XM Radio. Jessica, you were explaining that there is the Just Say No deal. You can go on the internet and they post all of the groups who used to support Hillary Clinton who will not be supporting Barack Obama.
That is correct, sir.
What is the principal reason why you will not support Barack Obama?
First of all, because I find that the DNC has been perhaps a culprit on this Democratic party mess that we find ourselves in today. We feel that the Senator Barack Obama was not elected. He was rather selected by the DNC. And that goes against the core principles of democracy.
And why do you jump to that point?
He won caucuses and he won primaries in various states, and that qualifies
and
him.
More delegates.
And more delegates than Hillary Clinton. And his program, his policies are not that far afield from Hillary Clinton's. Don't you think?
Jessica, I guess you've I think you've convinced Jessica. She's changed your mind. Let's go to Larry, listening to us in, is it Cossey, Texas?
It is. Yeah.
Cossey, where's on KLBJ Radio, but where's Cossey, Texas?
This is halfway between Dallas and Houston.
Okay, well, nice to hear from you tonight. What can we do for you, Larry?
Well, I tell you, it's this idea of our presidential nominees not paying attention to our energy policy. Neither of them have any real viable energy policy. Now, it's not really up to them. It's really up to Congress. And how can we let Congress take a vacation when we have such a crisis, not only with energy, but with all these other mortgage problems? And how did everybody disregard the mortgage problems if we had people on talk radio like Clark Howard two or three years ago said that these mortgages that were being sold were going to be the doom of our economy and that we would have a lot of foreclosures and a lot of companies going out of business? How could Clark Howard project that and everybody else not pay any attention to it?
Bill Kadner, based on the people that you talk with, where does this issue rank with all the others that we've been talking about? What is riling people up?
I think this gentleman touched on all the issues that I've heard people rile them up. Just the general lack of kind of the question in people's minds is, why are these issues that are so important to us, why is it nobody ever seems to address them? Nobody seems to anticipate them. The oil issue is something we've known about for over 30 years. It was going to get to this point. It's amazing it hasn't gotten worse sooner.
I have an idea why it hasn't.
Go ahead.
The idea is that we've got a ton of white-collar hoodlums running our country, and we need to call our congressman or congressperson and tell them, stay at work and don't take the August break and get these problems solved. If you owned a business, you wouldn't just drop your business if it was in this crisis.
I want to ask, let's get Patrick into this discussion. Patrick Brady, one of the things you do working for Deloitte Touche is you root out corruption in multinational corporations. You did that at the state level when you were with the state's attorney of Cook County. You did it at the federal level. You've been involved in some high visibility cases. So rooting out and finding corruption is core to your personal and professional makeup. Do you understand the frustration of this caller and others when they look at the operations of government? I think it's one of the reasons why Congress is held in such low esteem, because they, regardless of the politics, regardless of the philosophy, nobody thinks that the people, once they go to Washington, really give a rat's ass about them anymore.
Yeah, and I think that you have to make a distinction between corruption and competence. And corruption, I think, stays at the same levels all the time, in my experience. There's just, when in an economic downturn, corruption becomes more evident. When the SNL failure in the 90s, failures in the 90s, we saw what was going on at these institutions. We're probably in for the same cycle here. So I think it's more competence versus corruption. But I certainly sympathize or empathize with what the caller's saying about the energy policy. And there's nothing that have been done about this for 30 years. But Senator McCain has announced his energy policy on what he wants to do. Nuclear, drilling, offshore drilling, reform of the transportation industry. He calls it the Lexington Project, has 7 or 8 components. So I do think, as Phil said earlier, that this is an issue that's going to be on the forefront. And I think something's going to be done or has to be done.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, competence. You know, the way to get rid of incompetent people in your business or any place is to vote them out. And I tell you what, we need to get a hold. Everybody needs to call their congressperson, say, get on this, or you're not going to be a congressperson.
Let's not give the American people a free pass here. You know, we all knew this was coming. Yet, who was going out and buying the SUVs, the Humvees? You know, people were buying bigger cars, worse gas mileage. So how much concern among the public was there 3 years ago about the oil problem? Carter and Reagan ran on this issue in 1979, as I recall. And Jimmy Carter was saying everybody has to conserve, everybody has to tighten their belt. And Ronald Reagan said, no, we can spend our way out of this. We can all make times better. And people overwhelmingly elected him because they wanted to believe that.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Phil Graham's comments resonated so strongly, and why McCain had to denounce them quickly, because Graham was one of the advocates of this deregulation regime that allowed the mortgage situation to descend and to get so bad. And I think that's one of the reasons why.
But he was right in the fact that a lot of Americans whine about it, but if you ask them what people should do, they don't have an answer to that. Now they may not have the knowledge, they may not have the access to the information to come up with it, but how many people are going to tell you what is the answer to the oil crisis? Well, obviously, you know, we want to wean ourselves away from dependence on foreign oil. Okay, we've heard that. How can I do that starting tomorrow? How can I do that?
Well,
I walk to work.
That's true. I mean, those solutions are pretty elusive, but I think this notion that these corporate heads are seeking profit at all costs, that resonates among the American people. That's why a populist message that Hillary Clinton adopted late in her campaign and why Edwards became popular again because of this populist message.
That windfall tax that she proposed didn't work 30 years ago. And so that might be the populist message, but it's not, I don't think, a particularly effective message because it's been proven wrong.
Does T. Boone Pickens, does he have part of the solution?
I think he does.
So it has to be a billionaire who's going to buy time? He's going to buy his shelf space like Ross Perot?
Well, that's one of the reasons. That's one of the problems with the system that we have.
Get him together with Bloomberg and they might be able to do it.
The three millionaires, right?
The three multi-billionaires.
Indeed.
With a B. 1-800-723-8289. We got calls. You hear them when we roll on from Chicago.
For
free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. A reminder that this Tuesday night, if you're watching the All-Star game, All-Star baseball game, Tuesday night is also the final balloting night at midnight. It's the final opportunity for you to cast your ballot, and there is no dollars involved. All you have to do is go to www.museum.tv. And you can vote for inductions into the Radio Hall of Fame. In the National Active category, we have Bob Costas. We have Focus on the Family. We have Dr. Laura and Howard Stern. In the National Pioneer category, Art Bell, Ralph Emery, Gangbusters, and Barry Farber. In the Local Regional Active category, we have Howie Carr of Boston, Steve Dahl of Chicago, Bob Grant of New York, Ron Owens of San Francisco. And in the Local Regional Pioneer category, Gary Burbank of Cincinnati, Harry Callis, the voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, Charlie Tuna in Los Angeles, and Jim Zabel from WHO, the voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes from Des Moines, Iowa. Again, all you have to do is go to the website, www.museum.tv, click on the Radio Hall of Fame icon, and again, Tuesday at midnight, whoever finishes first in all four of those categories will be inducted into America's only Radio Hall of Fame, and that broadcast will take place on Saturday, November 8th at the Renaissance Hotel in Chicago. So if you've not voted, vote. Let us go to CJ listening to us in Mount Vernon, Kentucky. Where's Mount Vernon, CJ?
It's about an hour or so east of Lexington, Kentucky.
That's correct. And what can we do for you tonight?
I'd like to get your response from each member of the panel there regarding what I think was the first attempt on Barack's life. I think that plane wasn't meant to make it down in one piece last week. Do you think he will survive till November? And if he's lucky enough to win in November, do you think he will survive the term?
Well, we generally don't like to speculate on this subject, but I do want to ask Salim because, again, I mentioned earlier, and I don't mean to suggest that it is only the black community that has a large slice of conspiratorialists. There are many in the white community who
have good reason to be
see a conspiracy in a variety of different ways. Was there much discussion about, for those that are not familiar, there was the Barack Obama campaign plane had to make an unscheduled landing due to some mechanical problems?
I haven't heard much about that. A few comments, but the usual suspects, the terminally paranoid,
okay,
were about the only ones who responded.
Sir, I'm going to cut the discussion off there because I think everyone knows what you have have on your mind, and I just don't see anything positive coming out of speculation about what happens, and I just think certain things probably shouldn't be speculated about, and I think that's one such thing. Glenn in Chicago on WLS, you're on the air. Glenn, are you there?
Yes. Yeah, I'd like to bring up a point that was mentioned the last hour.
Yes.
Is about the fact that the media likes good stories.
Yep.
There's no liberal bias, and I would like to argue that's true, but I believe the media likes good stories that are positive about liberals and good stories when it's negative about conservatives. And I came onto this a decade and a half ago when I was old enough to remember when President Reagan vetoed appropriations bills and the government was going to shut down. The media said, well, the president is shutting down the government and services won't be able to come about and so forth. And, you know, it's President Reagan shutting down the government. And then in a similar budget battle with President Clinton and a Republican Congress, when the Republican Congress passed the budget or was trying to cut the size of government or government spending, it was, you know, this very mean Newt Gingrich and these Republicans are cutting down services and shutting down the government. And I think there's just a lot of examples in which, even with the Iraq War, when American casualties were rising, it was a civil war, and there was a lot of media coverage. And when we had a week where there was no American casualties and the Iraqis are taking over more, that's a very, very positive, good story if the media wanted to cover it.
Let's let Phil respond. I'm sure as a lifelong journalist, you've heard this discussion many times.
Absolutely. Obviously, there's some bias, I think, in all directions at any given point in time that you can find, you can point out. I do think journalists love a good story. As far as deaths always make easier news reportage, especially on TV, than the lack of death does. And how many people actually care about the lack of death, whether it be in the city streets or in some foreign country? Most people are just, okay, that's good news, that's it. And they don't even hear the message when it is out there. Although I think in recent weeks, I think we've heard a lot about how well things are going in Iraq. I don't think we're hearing much about how badly things are going in Afghanistan. But, you know, that's the way things tend to go with the media in cycles.
Well, I would also like to say it's not just the media. There's an educational media bias, I believe, that's, you know, certainly as dangerous as what Eisenhower warned with the military-industrial complex. You got the American Federation of Teachers endorsing, you know, Senator Obama. And, you know, teachers are what mold the ideas and minds of the young. And, you know, I believe a teacher should not give any type of influence over students when it comes to politics in the classroom.
That, sir, and, we're going on that wishful point, we're going to have to say farewell to you. It's not likely to change, but I think you make a valid point and a good fodder for a future broadcast. Our thanks this evening to Phil Kadner, columnist for the Southtown Star. Phil, thanks very much for joining us. Salim Uwakil from In These Times has joined us, and he's been a supporter of Barack Obama. And Patrick Brady, supporter of John McCain, longtime friend of John McCain. In fact, his wife Julie is deputy co-chair in the state of Illinois. He is the new Illinois National Republican Committeeman. It's a job he wanted, and he's going to be out there raising money in the home state of Barack Obama. A gold star for Patrick Brady. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Stephanie Lecce for their assistance in the production of this program. A Genevieve production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.